Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.
Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. I'm Sheng Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. You can also find my work at MEC Sharks and on Twitter at Sheng_Peng.
And I'm Keegan McNally. You can find me on Twitter at Half_Hockey, at my website, half-wallhockey.com, or at San Jose Hockey Now. We're back with another episode.
We're back, and we have an exciting episode this week. Last week, we talked about the top 10 prospects in the Shark system. Now, we're going to turn our focus toward the 2024 draft. And we're going to reveal Keegan's top 16 prospects for the 2024 draft.
Love it. So it'll be a top 16 right now. And I think before the draft, we'll probably have a top 32 or maybe a little bit more at some point. But I feel good about the 16 right now. We're also going to touch a little bit on the Sharks play recently, the play of a few players like Thomas Bortolo, William Eklund, Henry Thrun, and then the recent PTO signing of Akeem Alou. And that'll kind of round out our week. It wasn't a very busy week in terms of Sharks news this week.
Yeah, but it was a lot of losing, like usual.
Yeah.
Yay, tank. So let's talk about a couple of things that stood out, though. I think you mentioned Thomas Bortolo on the top, and I've been very, very impressed by Thomas Bortolo since he's come back up. Now, of course, it is late season hockey, but this is the best that Thomas Bortolo has looked to me in the NHL ever, even better than his first stint in 21-22, which I thought was obviously he had a lot of flash. He had that shootout winner against Vegas, but it also was a lot of immature hockey, a lot of just throwing the puck everywhere. And that kind of hockey bled into last year's stint with the Sharks at the end of the season without the productivity. And this year's beginning of the season stint with the Sharks, also without the productivity, just kind of wild, immature hockey. And David Quinn actually put it pretty well, I think, when he said that Thomas Bortolo is playing big boy hockey now. And that's a lot of that is, it sounds like sort of cliche, but it's not forcing offense. It's making the simple play when that's what's available to you. And then showing a little bit of flash when that moment is there. Just the one moment I thought of in the last game, that backhanded chance he had on Mrazek at the end that should have won it for the Sharks there. Should have given him the hat trick. Great save by Mrazek. But that's kind of thing, that moment, okay. Thomas Bortolo let his skill, his creativity take over there, right? Yeah. But so many other points of the game, though, doesn't try to do anything more than he really should at that moment. And that's really, if you combine all that, that's a very effective hockey player. Make the routine plays 80% of the time. And then when there is that moment to make your move or whatnot, then make it. And obviously he has, I think, up to five. I think he has five goals in his, yep, just his last nine games since he got called up. Pretty good.
Yeah, I got a couple of thoughts. He's playing like he doesn't want to go back to the AHL, which is always good to see. Sometimes you get the call up and you're just kind of keeping your head above water and you're surviving kind of thing. And they send you back down, but he's playing like, you guys can't send me back down because I'm probably, you know, I'm better than what you got right now in the NHL. So I love that. His demeanor seems different to me. Like the way that he talks like in interviews and just the way that he the play on the ice seems more mature than it was last year, the year before. Just different. I don't know what happened exactly, but he seems like some coaching kind of like got into him to play differently.
I think sometimes it clicks for a player. It takes takes a few rounds, right? Sometimes it's mindset, right? I think I mentioned before that I felt that was the biggest thing in his way. Yeah. And what I meant by that was just that there was a little bit of adherence or maybe refusal to change his game enough for what he needed to do at the NHL. And now he's finally doing it. Maybe he had to be sent down a few times. Maybe he had to be talked to a few times. I was worried, honestly. Yeah. There were points last year, this year, over the summer, things I saw, things I heard. I thought he might be going the way of Ryan Merkley, to be honest. I think I've cited that name kind of in relation, just because the talent, there's a lot of talent there, but I just didn't know that if it would come together. But on the other hand, though, I think I've also said, too, that if he hits his ceiling, that his ceiling is higher than the number of the prospects in the Shark system. Like a guy like, you know, I compared a lot to him often just because of the same draft year, Agushin. This Bortolo might end up better than Agushin. Like if I did our top 10 prospects list now today, after even just seeing these last five games, I might move Bortolo up now. So anyway, though, I think that was all a legitimate worry with him. Just sort of that mindset. Would he kind of just sort of grow up in his game? And I think that's finally happening. I think it takes time. And also, too, I think this is a testament to just overall just the development of the Sharks, which is much maligned for sure. Over the last 10 years or so, the development staff, which I think unfairly so. I just don't think that they've had enough talent to kind of mold, in my opinion. And so when they do have some talent here, it's working. And I will mention, too, I had this this argument with a fan about a week ago, AJ. I think he's on Twitter. He's a Sharks 1135. And anyway, we were talking about how, you know, who have the Sharks developed over the last decade, right? And I was like, okay, how about Barkley Gaudreau and Jake Middleton, right? And that's as much development as possible for guys. One, Gaudreau was unsigned. Middleton was a seventh round pick that the Kings dumped and the Sharks signed as free agent. Middleton developed for four years in the Barracuda system, and Gaudreau not as long. But anyway, those are both testaments of they can clearly develop players, I think, if the talent is there, if the willingness is there. You know, Bortolo, the question was never about the talent, but it was about mindset and willingness. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they were maybe hard on him, right? Strict on him. They didn't just give him the NHL. They made him earn it. Has, I think, ultimately made him a better player. And again, late season hockey, I don't know if he's not going to score. What is it? Yeah, if it's 5-9, he's not going to be – I don't project him as a 40-goal scorer in this league. That's what 5-9 projects to. But I think, though, that their adherence to a standard, the Sharks, has made Bortolo a better player, wherever that takes him, wherever his future is.
Yeah, I think the caveat is obviously we've been fooled by like March and April hockey before when the Sharks are very thin because they've gone through the trade deadline and injuries and all that, and players are playing up a level in terms of where they normally would slot it. So we have been fooled by that before. So I think it's going to be more about consistency with his play. Right. Like if he keeps this up and maybe even he dips a tiny bit, it's okay. But it, you know, dips a lot or goes back to, you know, his old habits in terms of throwing the puck away and not taking care of it or not playing physical or not being engaged, then it becomes a different story. But the consistency is going to be the thing to do, especially in training camp next year.
Well, one thing we can compare it to, though, yes, late season hockey, but we can compare it to Thomas Bortolo from October of this year, last year, and his cup of coffee a couple of years ago, right? This is a different player. This is a much better all-around player. And so that I can say for sure. What that means for the NHL, I'm still not sure, like you mentioned. But again, though, compared to Thomas Bortolo of the past, much different, much better player.
And also playing on wing, I think, has helped him a lot.
Oh, yeah. It helped with the not thinking, right? I think that's a big part of it. He doesn't look like he's thinking out there. I think as center, you have a lot of responsibility. We saw that with, actually, I guess, a good segue, William Eklund. Yeah. And William Eklund had been playing second line center since late January. I put out an article about that. Some of the stats there are pretty ugly. One of them that stand out to me, and I know the faceoffs aren't that important in the big picture, but he had, since he went to center on January, I think 30th, right? He has a 30% faceoff percentage.
Wow.
That's
like normally young guys will be in the like 40s, like, yeah, 41, and you're like, oh, it's pretty bad, but they'll get better. But 30 is super low.
Yeah. That's super low. And then on the, he particularly struggled. I thought that he was holding his own up to the road, mm-hmm, trip, but he really struggled on the road, yeah, trip. And it's not just in the numbers. Minus nine, 20% faceoff winning percentage in the five games, zero, yeah, points. But you could just see it on the ice, though. He would get the puck and it just wouldn't, it wouldn't really go anywhere. And some of it, his wingers didn't help him too, honestly. I know that Luke Cunning gets a lot of too much flack online for dragging Willie Mecklin down. But there were a couple plays there that, yeah, maybe Cunning could have made a better play. Maybe Zadina could have made a better play. But mainly, though, I think it was him, though. I think he really needed a position change. Mm-hmm. And I think and David Quinn gave that to him. And I know that a lot of fans were unhappy that he was put on the fourth line. But look at how he's performed since he's gone there, though. He's also looked like a different player the last couple of games. And a lot of putting these players on the lower lines that Quinn has talked about is to give them better matchups. And mm-hmm, that's he did that. If you remember, he moved Eklund down to third line, I think, a couple months ago. And then Eklund responded with some great hockey. And that was actually the reason that Quinn stated, not in retrospect, not in hindsight, but before when I asked him, he said, yeah, I want to give him better matchups. And sure, I think that's what's kind of happened here, that it kind of helps build back up the confidence. You know, Willie Mecklin's going to end up on a second line, a third line, maybe even a first line, right? And so we know that's going to happen eventually, but I don't think there's any hurry to it. Actually, another example of this is Thomas Bortolo. Yeah. Bortolo, when he was first called up this time around, I think he was on the first or second line at first. And pretty quickly, Quinn said, yeah, you know what, let's try him on the third line. And that third line with Sturm and I think mostly Bailey has actually been probably since the time that Bortolo has jumped on it, probably the Sharks' most consistent, yeah, line. Even the Nashville game, the 8-2 loss, that was the only line that I think I consistently liked maybe out mm-hmm there. And so anyway, I think that let's not get too worked up about things like this. Like, I think that's the one thing that Quinn is doing well. He, yeah, is setting a standard for the guys. Players are getting better. Younger players are getting better under him. Even scratches of veteran guys, be it your Duclair, your Barabanovs, even your LeBancs or Hoffmans or whatnot, right? I think a lot of it is to set a standard, to let the younger guys know that, hey, just because you scored over 20 goals six times like a Hoffman, even though you are the playoff hero of 2019 like LeBanc, even though you scored 31 goals like Duclair, etc., right? That there is a certain standard, and if you don't meet it, then you're going to sit. And so all that, yeah, I think he's done a very good job with that overall. And we see it with the Eklund, with the mm-hmm Bortolo. And then actually just a quick mention of Henry Thrun, who has struggled at times, but he also has done a good job of kind of overcoming it and having good games after bad games. And so I think that those three are guys that are examples of, well, and actually a lost guy, right? Zetterlin, right? Who, sure, hit 20 goals for the first time. So
pretty sweet.
These are all young guys that are developing and look like better players today than they did yesterday under Quinn.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Regarding Eklund, I think I've said this a bunch. I don't see him as a center. I think he has occasional good games as a center, and then he gets into this mode where he doesn't display his creativity, he doesn't affect play offensively, and he's not he's just trying to cover too much ice and doing too much as a center, I think, trying to do too much defensively, but it's not
thinking,
doesn't work
maybe,
out well,
right? Thinking, it's a, yeah, thinking part, right? Like he it actually said work. Himself yeah. I play my best hockey when I'm not thinking. Well, that's what you're kind of doing at wing. That's what Bortolo has kind of said too. Bortolo said that, yeah, at wing I'm not really, like, now I'm not thinking, just kind of, I'm just kind of doing, right? And mm-hmm. So you see that with both those guys. And yeah, I agree with that. Likely Eklund ends up at wing.
As a winger.
Even on the road trip, I know it's sort of like hindsight, but I thought, yeah, maybe they need to put him back on wing. I didn't necessarily think fourth line. I thought maybe just switch him and Cunning. But nonetheless, though, yeah, like a move to wing was back in order.
Yeah, it looked like he did in Sweden when he was center, second line center. Then
he was getting there, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so... Yeah, but he has looked better. I think he's a little bit more confident, and I think he'll probably move up the lineup soon. Or they keep him there and try and get better matchups. Who knows? But...
Yeah, they just need the center, though. That's
yeah.
I mean, they've already said that Cunning isn't great at isn't. He's better at wing than he is at center, and so now you're forcing him to play there. They don't have any. And so I don't know what they're going to do with, I mean, it's only 12 games left in the season, but, it'd be nice if they had a extra centers
like a Will Smith, right? So they
maybe
sign
a Will Smith. Yeah. But Will Smith is doing out. a little too well. I guess we should give a quick shout out to just quick mention of that. Will Smith, Hockey East, champion, 9 points in 2 games, MVP of that tournament. Chris Peters says that just those 2 games may have changed the Hobie Baker conversation, because I think going into this weekend, Will Smith is a Hobie Baker finalist, but I don't know if he was the favorite, right? Probably Gauthier or something like that, right? Might have been the favorite.
Yeah, celebrating or whoever.
Yeah, but Will may have changed the voting there. I think Chris said online that voting concludes after the regionals of the tournament upcoming, so... So yep. There's still time for Will Smith to make his case, but I think
leading the NCAA in points.
Had
5 points in his last game, 4 goals and an assist. It just looked like he was everywhere on the ice, and obviously they is a huge game, right? And he showed up in the biggest game, so that's exactly what you want to see from that draft pick. I'm super excited about Will Smith. And I don't think there's, unless they get knocked out in the first game, which I think is Friday. If they get knocked out in the first game, it's possible that the Sharks like try and sign him and go from there. But I also don't think they're going to get knocked out in the first game. I think they're going to be there for a while.
People also, you know, like a lot of people are saying, I think, you know, we'll talk about, well, we're trying to get him on the air to debate that Pierre Maguire, right? And Jimmy Murphy, Jimmy's a friend of mine, so I promoted his podcast where Pierre was saying a lot of unpleasant things about the Sharks rebuild, Jimmy. But one of the things that I think they kind of mentioned is, they alluded to is that Will Smith coming over here, he's going to get killed. It won't be a good situation for him. And that may be the case, but one thing that they don't seem to mention, or a lot of this is going to be a Will's choice. You can't, if Will Smith wants to come out, I don't think the Sharks will be like, no, you have to look what happened with Cutter Gauthier.
Yeah, no, you like, sign immediately.
If Will wants to come out, if he thinks he can handle it, and if you can't convince him to stay, then he's coming. And you just got to build, like, put people around him so he doesn't get killed. At least some veteran guys or some, you know, big guys or whatever you think you need to make sure that his first year is not too bumpy with the Sharks. So let's not forget that part of it. It's not completely the Sharks' choice what they do with Will Smith. But anyway, a quick shout out to Quentin Musty, just passed 100 points. Luca Cagnoni, the most productive season for WHL defenseman since 93-94.
Crazy.
Yeah. So also, too, I have a top 10 prospects articles coming out that I don't know what you guys will think of it, but we'll see. A lot of scout opinions in it, so I just want to throw that in there. And finally, before we get to our last topic, Akeem Alou, I wanted to mention too about Barracuda recalls. So I found out yesterday, actually, from Joel himself, that the Sharks have just one regular recall left, and that sounds like, oh no, you know, sky is falling. You only have one that means you can only call up one guy. But the way these things work, though, from what I understand, this is talking to another AHL person, not Joel, but another AHL person, that even if you have just one regular recall, teams just fiddle around with all the time with injuries. Like a guy has like kind of a little soreness. Hey, sit out for a week. OK, okay? Sure. So we can get a look at so and so, and a guy and a veteran who's a little bit sore is like, okay, sure, whatever. And so it's basically kind of a joke that's just sort of worked around. And so the Sharks will be calling up some people. It won't be just one player, even though they only have one regular recall left. So it might just be a couple of lower body flare-ups, upper body contusions, whatnot, right? So, mm-hmm. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that. Finally, then, since we're talking about the Barracuda, so Akeem Alou. So that's a great story. I think the Barracuda signed him to a PTO. Alou is 34. He's had, 12 surgeries. He hasn't played professionally since 2020. Obviously, don't have to get too much into his backstory. We all know it. He was a former second-round pick, has dealt with a lot of, racism, hazing, different incidents, right, in the past, right? Bill Peters, Steve Downey, incidents like that. But anyway, I think this is a perfect story. I hear some flack, people kind of showing their ass a little bit online, talking about, you're blocking development. You're not blocking anybody's development. First of all, AHL, there's no roster size limits, so you're not taking anybody's spot. Alou, actually, I spoke with Alou a couple of days ago. He's not like ready to play yet. So it's not like he's going to get right in there and just take somebody's spot, quote unquote, right? Obviously, Sharks are obviously going to be calling up some players too. So there's going to be some winger spots open. So I think this is all just it'll be a cool story if he's able to make his way back to be an AHL contributor and show enough that maybe he even makes it back to the NHL one day. So I think this is all just sort of a good story. Good on Mike Greer for giving him a chance. Good on Akeem Alou for not giving up on his dream.
Yeah, it was surprising because I felt like it was a blast from the past. I was like, Akeem Alou? I hadn't heard that name in a long time. I think it's interesting. And Greer is trying to make a name for himself in the GMing world and for both, with players as well as with other GMs. So sometimes moves like don't make a lot of sense. I guess just from a pure, is Akeem Alou one of the better AHL players right now? Maybe not.
No, he's not. I mean,
so it doesn't really make a lot of sense from a pure hockey sense. But he's just trying to make a name, I think, in terms of being a GM that you can trust in this league. And I think it's an interesting move from that perspective. But any other news of this week? The Sharks were bad. That's the big news, I guess.
They're always bad.
I'm not wearing a jersey because I feel like that Nashville game was very soul crushing. And
it's okay. They made it up to you with the Chicago game. So
that one was soul crushing though too. I wanted them to lose, but at the same time, I was like,
I wanted to get Devin Cooley his win. Exactly. And also, I didn't want him to lose that way too.
Exactly.
Every game that he's been in, I've said the ideal thing that happens because they're both against Chicago is that the Sharks lose 2-1, 1-0. Devin is incredible in the games, and the Sharks lose in regulation. So.
Yeah, and it wasn't good. 4-0 lead, and then lose 5-4. It helps tank bowl.
I do want to add though before we get to your top 16. Also, I have a crazy trade proposal in the top 16 too. So wait for that. But anyway, if you haven't seen Devin Cooley talk about the goals he gave up in the Chicago game, the most recent one, right? It's great. You should watch it. I've never seen a goalie so demonstrative. I'm so willing to kind of break down his mistakes. Definitely, there's a goalie coach in the future there, I think, with him, right? And so anyway, you should watch that because he's I should be doing this. I should be doing this, but I'm more like this, sitting back, and there's holes. And it's really a great video, and he's really great. And so, anyway, watch that if you haven't seen it. It's on the website, of course.
Yeah, I love the story, and I hope he gets some more starts and maybe a win this season.
Yeah,
maybe just a win. Hey,
they got Krona his win, and so let's get Cooley his win at home. So
love it. Okay. Let's do this. Let's talk about the top 16. So last year, I think around this time, I had already had already had a top 32 out, I think. This year, mostly either because of my schedule and all that stuff, I've kind of not done as much work, but I've done enough to feel good about where I'm at with these 16. And the top 32 will come. It's also not as deep of a draft class, I think, as last year, in my opinion, or also a lot of scouts' opinions, too. Last year, it was like there was a bunch of guys that you could peg at going in the first round or first round grades. This year, I don't think it's as many. I think like 10 less or so.
Next year is deeper too, right? From what I understand.
Yeah, next year's a little, well, theoretically. Everybody always says that next year is going to be better. It's like the never ending.
You know that draft, 2027, baby. That's the one.
That's the one. Well, 2026 has Gavin McKenna in it. So maybe. But yeah, I don't want to like say, oh, next year's the one. But yeah, I think everybody knew 2023 was the one, the really the one.
Yeah.
This year does have a lot of super cool players, though, and especially defenders, I think, is the big selling point of this draft, is that beyond a couple of forwards, there's a lot of D in the first top 16 that are up there. So I'll share my screen if it'll actually let me do it. There we go. Let's try that. Coming up.
Oh, you're gonna give it all away right now? You can give
it. I am. We're gonna go. Okay. We're going all the way, baby. This lets us like lay it all out there. But
okay,
I have it's separated by tiers currently. So there's the tier of tier one by itself, and then 2 to 5, 6 to 13, and that 14 tier goes to about 28 or so, 27 mm-hmm. right now. But this is the top 16 that I think. I feel good about for right now. So okay. Where do you want to start, Shang?
Well, we talked about let's go in tiers and then let's go from the top because everyone knows the top. And so what have you seen of Macklin? You've seen Macklin live. You went to the Beanpot, right? Mm-hmm. And other times too. And so anyway, tell us kind of is the hype. It looks like the hype is real for Macklin for you because you have him in tier above everybody else. I've heard comps like Jonathan Toews.
Yep.
And so are those reasonable comps? What are you seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the one that sticks out, I think, to everybody just because mm-hmm. of his overall style, his build, his frame, just the way that he commands a team on the ice. It feels very Jonathan Toews-like. And I don't remember who it was. One of the hockey pundits was like, he's going to be a first-line center. It's just about how good of a first-line center he's going to be kind of thing. And you never want to put that on a prospect, but Celebrini's not the kind of guy that, not the kind of prospect that is so one-dimensional or so flawed that you worry that maybe there is a chance that he could bust. He's so well-rounded, but also has standout puck control, standout shooting, and a great compete level for what he does. That I'm not really worried. Like if you get Celebrini, it feels like he's going to slot in as your number one center eventually for your franchise. Now,
and for a winning team too, right? Not just
For a team that can build around him and surround him with talented offensive players. He seems like a guy that could potentially maybe win you a Stanley Cup as your number one center. So he's not like Crosby, McDavid, you know, Bedard level generational superstar talent. That's not what I think of when I think of Celebrini. He's just a very solid center that is gonna hopefully lead your franchise to deep in the playoffs if you get him.
Centers of that ilk, Toews, Andre Kopitar, Patrice Bergeron. They have pretty much as many Stanley Cups as the Crosby, McKinnon, the dynamic touch, right? Well, Crosby's got 3, and then Kopitar's got 2. Toews has 3, I think, right? Bergeron has 1. But anyway, so you can well, you don't need Connor McDavid to win it. Obviously, he hasn't won a Stanley Cup yet. You don't need Connor McDavid to win the Stanley Cup. You can win a Stanley Cup with a guy like a Celebrini, which I think is a very important thing to remember.
Yeah, he is and it's honestly like that's the hardest position to get. Even if you don't get, Bedard or McDavid or Crosby or whatever, that number one center is the hardest thing to acquire in the NHL.
And I mean, who knows? Maybe Celebrini will win more Stanley Cups than a Bedard.
Maybe, yeah. You really never know. And we are putting a lot of expectations on him, but the kid is very, very good. He's been good for years, and his freshman season, he's carrying BU to being a top 5 team in the country, top 2 team in the country, really. So, yeah, it's sky's the limit for him. I just very excited if the Sharks do get him, because he's perfect for what they need, basically. Mm. So he's in his year by himself because he's got the combination of ceiling as well as just the projectability there that mm-hmm. he alone is the most valuable pick in this draft. So it's not really close to my opinion.
Okay.
That's it. 2 through 5 is interesting. I think there's a very good chance that in later editions that this kind of jumbles around a bit, but I think mm-hmm. These prospects are going to be the ones that stick here. I like these four guys more than I like the rest of the draft, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's Ivan Demidov at 2, Berkeley Catton at 3, Caden Lindstrom at 4, and Artem Levchinov at 5. Just kind of Demidov and Catton both are smaller, mm-hmm. right? And they both are the prototypical high skill, high production, super great puck handlers that they feel like, if you're looking on pure skill from the rest of the draft, that they're kind of in that tier above, a little bit below Celebrini, I think, just because they don't play a game that is as projectable to the NHL, either one of them, Berkeley Catton or Demidov. But they both have a skill level that I feel like it's just higher than everybody else in this list. Mm-hmm. And that's why they come in at 2 and 3. Demidov specifically, his puck handling is some of the best that I think from this draft or last draft, like mm-hmm. just insane puck on a string, basically. And obviously he's playing against junior competition in Russia right now, which is crappy, to put it in a better way. The MHL is kind of watered down a lot right now. I mean, he's destroying the MHL, but you need to see whatever style of play like translate. And it's very hard to see it right now just because he's doing whatever he wants on the ice, and nobody can touch him and nobody can take the puck off him. So how does that go forward as a 5'11" winger that's not very big or physical? I don't know. It's tough to say, but he is super, super skilled. And if you miss out on Celebrini and you're looking for just skill, Demidov and Catton are two of the guys that stick out to me.
Obvious question, Demidov or Michkov last year?
Still Michkov. I think it's closer than I thought it was going to be, but I still like Michkov because Demidov is more of a, both of them, great puck skills. Michkov's a significantly better shooter than Demidov. Mm. And then Michkov played a more physical style, even if maybe he's an inch shorter than Demidov. But more physical, more well-built, better athlete.
Yeah, stockier, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So I like his style of play, even if he does have a lot of flaws and he can be a little, and his attitude and all that stuff. There's been a lot of talk about Michkov, but sure. I think his game is just a little bit more projectable than Demidov's is right now.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I'd still go with Michkov, but it's close. And I do really like him just because the skill in Demidov is fantastic. And same with Catton. I think Catton mm-hmm. is a kind of guy that, similar to Celebrini, really puts his team on his back and night in, night out is their best player. I think the physical tool, like build of Catton is a little bit where people might get paused. And what is he at the next level? Is he really a center? Is he a winger kind of thing? So
sounds like a Will Smith debate.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I think, it's close in that kind of comp. But I like him a lot. And the other two, 4 and 5, honestly might move over them just depending on like later editions of this, because Lidstrom and Levchinov are two dudes that you look at and you're like, they're gonna play in the NHL. They have the physical tools, they have the skill, their play styles. Like Levchinov makes a lot of mistakes currently as a defender, but his highs are so high and his tools and his handedness, honestly. Like he's going to be coveted by NHL teams. Mm. And I would be surprised if he doesn't go top 5, probably. I mean, Lidstrom, it's possible.
Lidstrom is a riser, right? He's kind of a late bloomer.
Yeah. Lidstrom was on the radar cause he's a big kid.
Lindstrom. Yeah. Lindstrom.
Yeah. He's on the radar cause he's a bigger center. And this year he's just kind of, he got injured about halfway through the year. So he hasn't played a lot in the back half, which might hurt his stock a little bit. But 6'5" centers that are super physical and love to hound for pucks and love to, you know, hit people on the boards and take pucks off of people and have great skill already with he's a good playmaker, great shooter. He's like your all around top six center. That's what he feels like to me. And he needs a lot of refinement in his game, and he also needs to fill out. Like, he's 6'5", and he's big, but, you know, once he puts on muscle, like, he's going to be kind of a force. Like, not just a can keep his head above water, but he could be a force physically.
So you really see him more as maybe a second line center then? As a,
I think if it all
more
comes
likely.
To, yeah. Yeah, more likely second line, but if it all comes together, it's possible. He just doesn't, I don't think he has that standout skill level that puts him at a first line automatically. It's just he might also, like, he plays center, and you want that kind of guy to be a center, but he plays really, really well along the boards and, like, being physical, getting pucks off of people. So is he a wing at the next level, just a super talented physical winger, possibly, instead of a center? But you do want him at center just because, like, NHL teams love big centers.
Sure. And then Lashunov is interesting that you have him in a very defense-heavy draft, but you have all your defensemen in the third tier, but you have Lashunov above the rest of them. And so do you see Lashunov as a future number one?
Yeah, I think if it all hits, then I think he is. And that's why he might go up above Lindstrom in like the next rankings is... If it all comes together, yes. Brent Burns has been a good comp for him for a while. He's a big right-handed shot that can make some mistakes defensively, play a little bit loose. But when he's on and leading your power play, you don't really give a shit, you know? And like, that's kind of what I see as Lashunov. In certain games, it's very apparent that he's got, and he's still pretty. I mean, he's young and for the NCAA, and he's doing extremely well there right now. So I do. I think it's possible that he comes in and is your number one eventually.
All right. Crazy trade proposal. I mentioned this online. And what do you think of this? So the Sharks, let's say they do not get the number one pick. Mm-hmm. Let's say it goes to Chicago. Who knows, right? But would you think about trading Will Smith and whatever the pick the Sharks get in 2024 that is not the number one, the 2, 3, whatever it is, right? For the first overall pick of the 2024 draft.
That's actually
would you think nuts. About it?
No, I wouldn't. Okay. I think it's a little, it's close, but it's a little too much value with Will Smith and another elite prospect. And there's still
Chicago can give you a second round pick back. Even it up a little bit.
It's close, but I don't think so. I don't know how to make that value work because I really do like Will Smith. I think the Sharks just need too much, right? So if you're giving away another pick, you're putting all your eggs in the Celebrini basket. I can't make a decision on that. I'm going to say no.
I would still think about it because I think that the Sharks, they need a lot, obviously, but they also need like a clear-cut franchise guy. Yeah. And Smith, as great as he's been this year, and I think as much as actually maybe he's kind of improved, like raised his stock from even last year, right, when he was a number four pick, so a pretty high stock already. But I don't know if I see him as a guy that is going to be your best player on a Stanley Cup team. Whereas Celebrini, you can see it, right? Obviously, Bedard, going back to Bedard, you can too. But Celebrini, even if he's, like we talked about, not as productive as a Bedard, his all-around game, right? Can he be the best player on a top team? I think so. Smith, not so sure. And whoever you're picking 2, 3 here, right? I mean, they're maybes, right? Because, they're still... These guys are all 18, so we haven't seen that extra year of development for them. Whereas Celebrini, you see it more immediately. So I don't know. If you're that sure about Celebrini, hitting that Jonathan Taves kind of ceiling, Andre Kopitar, that kind of thing, I think about it.
Yeah, I think there's also many more years of losing for the Sharks to come.
Sure.
So I think there are more chances. And fair. Yeah, it's tough, though. Like, it's a good... It's a good question. I don't think either team would do it, but it's a good question. Like, if somehow Chicago won it or whatever. Yeah, so that middle tier or that second tier is kind of guys that I see at top of the lineup players or possible top of the lineup guys, top six or top line even, depending on if they hit their ceilings. Doesn't mean that they're all going to hit. Obviously, you know, as soon as you get past a certain level in the draft, everybody becomes bustable. That's a good way to put it. But I think their chances, in my opinion, are just a smidge higher than this next tier, which is pretty long. I like this next tier a lot because, like, it's a combination of really good floor on players and then really interesting swings with high upside that kind of molded into one tier for me. There's a lot of defensemen in this tier.
Yeah.
Right. Levshinov was my number one because I think he has everything you want. And if he hits just a little bit more, he's a number one D, where these guys, a couple more things have to fall into place to really put them on the first line, I think. But it's not impossible, for sure. I think some of them probably will get to that first line level.
What's nice about this having so many in this tier for you is that there's a good chance that the Sharks will get a pick in this tier with the Penguins pick.
Hopefully,
it's my guess. I don't know this as sort of this is not with any knowledge, but it's my guess that if I were Kyle Dubas, and the pick falls in the top 10, I would keep it, because either you can trade it for immediate help for Sidney Crosby, which I think is their number one priority, right, to still win, or if you can't find the right trade for that pick, then you just happen to get a really good prospect. But anyway, it gives you that option of trading, let's say it's the eighth pick of the 2024 draft, for immediate help. And of course that chance is your 2025 pick that becomes unprotected to the Sharks, but you're trying to win, and so these are the chances that you take for better or worse, as Sharks fans know from the end of the Doug Wilson era. So anyway that'd be my guess, but the Penguins, where they're at, actually I'm not sure exactly where they're at now, but there's a good chance that pick falls outside of the top 10, so 11, 12, 13, and so that looks like they're gonna get one of your third tier guys here.
Yeah, or even somehow if the second tier that they drop out and
somebody doesn't
like Catton or somebody.
Demidov only will interview with the Sharks. So.
Yeah, right. Like Demidov has the Russian factor or something. Something crazy happens. It's possible that even that tier could jump to like 11 or something. But yeah, this tier, there's just a ton of good value here. And I really hope the Sharks do get the 11th overall pick or whatever, because I think picking up a Celebrini and a defenseman is just ideal in some way. I do want to give a shout out to Konsta Hellenius, because he's kind of lost in this whole shuffle. It's listed as a right wing there, but he plays almost exclusively center right now.
Okay.
He's in Finland. He is having a monster season in the Finnish men's league. Not a big guy. He's 5'11". But he's just a very well. He reminds me of William Eklund, but a little more. I don't know, a little bit more physical, and just a very well-rounded center that also has a lot of skill and a lot of playmaking talent. I think people are down on him a little bit because his Finland's U20s in general were really crappy, and his play wasn't superb at the U20s, but in Finland, in the Finnish league, he sometimes takes over games as a very young player and is having a crazy good season for him. So I think if you're looking for a possible maybe second or middle six center, a Konsta Hellenius to me feels like he could fit that mold in the future, and maybe he goes to wing and plays higher up in the lineup, but he's just a very good prospect. So that's why he's up high, is I'd like his floor and I like his ceiling, as well as like his well-rounded game. So, Parikh, Siliaev, Dickinson, Bouillum, Yakimchuk. You can find any scouting list, and all of these guys and Levshinov are all going to be jumbled. Like, I feel like everybody has their favorite guy, and then a bunch of different rankings of all of these prospects. So putting them in a ranking is hard. I will say I'm a little bit lower on Siliaev than I think a lot of people are, because he's huge, a massive human that skates very well, that everybody looks at and goes, he's a massive human and a defender. He can be Victor Hedman. And I don't know. It's hard to look at what Victor Hedman is now and see what he was as a prospect. I don't really know. I didn't watch Victor Hedman as a prospect. So the development there is key. But I think there would be a huge offensive improvement from Siliaev and a whole game shift, basically, to make him into Victor Hedman, because he doesn't play an offensive style at all. He's a very defense first defender, loves to take the body, loves to use his size, and he's playing in the KHL and doing well. But he just seems like a very physical defender to me, rather than something that you can mold into a two way defender. So
sounds like a guy that would have been a number three pick like 15 years ago, like Griffin Reinhardt, like the shoo-in.
Yeah, like the big dude. It's going to eat minutes, going to be, physical. Yeah, 15 years ago, somebody would be like, he's going number two.
Yeah.
But he honestly still might. Like, NHL gyms do that all the time, where they look at a prospect and they're like, we can fix you. You know, we can make you something different just because your size and all that. And maybe I'll be wrong and he'll be amazing. Same people were worried about Moritz Seider in the same way. They were like, he's a big guy, but like his offense isn't all there. And then he turned into an excellent defender. So it's very, very possible, but I don't know. He just doesn't display any of it. Like when I watch him, I don't really ever see that side. So it's hard for me to say that it's going to just develop because he's going to play more pro hockey. It might not though. But he is going to play in the NHL if he comes over, because he's, 6'7" and skates and can defend decently well already. Like, the kid's going to play in the NHL. It's just what kind of role we'll see. So that's why he's at 8 instead of in that second tier, where some people do have him in that second tier.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, that some people think he's the best defenseman in his class, right?
So. Yeah, and it's, I see why. It's like the tools are hard to deny, the physical tools. But I have Zane Parikh above him, or Parikh, I can never say it right. I don't know. Zane Parikh, I still don't know. whenever I watch him, he's so just innately talented offensively that it's hard to put him lower. Like he creates offense so effortlessly from the point that it looks like he's not doing anything special until you realize that he's like just head and shoulders above a lot of other defenders offensively. He I don't know, everything about him and how he creates offense is awesome. And you worry because the comparison is something like Ryan Merkley. I don't think that's the case here. I think he's got a little bit more of a defensive floor than Merkley did. Merkley was so lost defensively that it hurts your brain to watch. And Zane Parikh is not like that. He obviously has some flaws and he does like sacrifice a lot of defense for offense, but he's not lost like Merkley was. So there's definitely a world where he turns into a, reliable power play quarterback, a guy that you shelter with a more defense first guy. But I think Erik Karlsson is like the world ceiling for him kind of thing. But it's not like he's going to hit there because he doesn't have the skating ability that Karlsson did, or just a lot of the soft puck skills that Karlsson did. So, but that's the kind of guy that you're looking at is that kind of player. So I like him a lot, but he is a risky pick because people have been looking at these 6 foot or so defenders that are super, super skilled offensively, and a lot of them have busted in the past couple drafts. So you look at, or it's ever since the Merkley draft, really, and maybe even before that, just these guys have busted and they haven't worked out. So it's very possible, but there is a world where he is a number one power play quarterback. So that's why he's up there for me. Dickinson, Booyam, Yakimchuk are the last three. I like all of them for different reasons. Dickinson, you can see that he'll probably slot into a lineup. I just don't know if the, in a top four, probably. I just don't know if the top line level is there for him. He does a lot of things well, but I don't think he's that creative offensively. And he relies on the fact that he plays for a very good team to kind of drive a lot of his production right now. Mm-hmm. So I think he's good. And a lot of people, some people put Dickinson as their number one defender just because he's big. He's got, you watch him and he does look like he belongs in the NHL, which is kind of a cop out for me to say, but he has a lot of the qualities of a top four defender in the NHL level. So he's still there in that tier. And if you get him at 11, you're not sad at all.
Right.
Because he's going to be a solid NHLer probably. Booyam's a wild card because Booyam is another one of the super skilled guys that I just don't know what he plays like or who he plays like in the NHL level at his size and his skating ability. He loves to activate. He loves to come off the wall and get to the center of the ice and try and create. And he is absolutely killing. It says he's in the NTDB there. That's wrong. He's in the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely killing the NCAA for a freshman and for a draft eligible defender. But it doesn't. People worry that maybe some of his production is a lot of empty calorie production, like on the power play and stuff, that he's not really doing anything special. But I don't know. There is. He is good. And he obviously showed out amazingly at the World Juniors, too. So I think he goes around this range maybe a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like him. It's just you worry about who he is at the NHL level, I think.
You think Parikh is a better defender?
I think Parikh just has a little bit higher ceiling offensively because, like, I think his game is a little bit more projectable offensively than Booyam's. I think Booyam's a better defender solely, but it's close. It's not like they're that far apart.
Okay,
just curious. Yeah. Yakupchuk's the last one. Some people love Yakupchuk. Some people have him in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a projection pick. He doesn't have good skating abilities. That's kind of the first thing. He's not a good skater. He takes a lot of risks offensively with the puck. But he is a great stick handler. He's a great shot. He's one of the... A lot of the WHL has had these kind of defenders that just love to take the puck on their own and blow past other defenders and do it all themselves. They've had that in the past couple drafts, and he kind of fits that mold. And then he's also just not very great defensively, despite being bigger, 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
He gets a little bit, not lazy, but just a little lackadaisical defending, I think is a good way to put it. So people have him low. I still think that there are a lot of good tools there that puts him in this tier. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot to round out. That's why he's last for me in defenders. But we're talking a lot about this tier. Cole Iserman's in this tier too.
Yeah, that's obviously a big drop off for where he was early in the season. But I know I've seen a lot of lists where he's come down quite a bit.
Yeah, we had, I think when we did this, I think we mentioned that it's possible, or maybe I did, that it was possible he drops a bit. And then his season has not been bad, just dropping on every single list, mine included. It's hard to get a handle of watching him because he's so shot focused and he's so reliant on his shot that he does everything based on how his ability to shoot the puck, all of his offense is geared around shooting, and it's very interesting. And obviously he's an elite shooter, like not just a good shooter. He's an elite shooter, I think, in terms of being a draft eligible prospect. But the rest of his game just kind of falls apart defensively, even just offensively. When he's not shooting the puck, he's just kind of there. He's looking for opportunities and ways to get into good ice for shooting, but that's it. It's just for shooting. Maybe I'm underselling it a touch. I'm sure he has games where he is a good playmaker, but it really just feels like everything is based on his ability to shoot. So how do you make that into an NHL player? It's going to take years, and you really hope that a lot of it just kind of comes around his shooting ability and turns him into a prospect that can play high in the lineup, but you also worry that he busts like Neil Yakupov and just can't hit it.
Or he's sort of a power play specialist, maybe like second unit, but that's okay, but that's not what you want.
Or even he's on the first unit, or even he's on the first unit, but he just can't play like the full 60 minutes. Like he can't play evens. You know, like there are guys in the NHL that are like that. But yeah, you do worry, and that's why he's been dropping a lot. At a certain point, it becomes good value, though. Like, if he drops into that, like, 14, 15, 16, it's like, somebody's got to take him. Same with, Cole Caulfield and his draft.
Lekarimaki.
Lekarimaki is a good one.
Years ago, right? Yeah.
At some point, you got to take him just because there is an elite skill. And you start to run out of guys that have everybody becomes a risk and bustable. Hmm. So you have to take him based on that elite skill if you want a shooter. But yeah, he's dropped a little bit, and he could still come back up, but I don't know. I feel like there's a couple of guys that are more exciting to me to take, sure. Especially for the Sharks. Not that this list is geared for the Sharks in general, but you know, just thinking about it. Last tier again goes a while, and there's a couple of guys here that have good.
Oh, tell us about Iginla just a quick bit though.
Yeah, Iginla, he's risen a lot, and people mm-hmm. were. Yeah. He was in the 20s, I think, the beginning of the year, maybe like 28, 29, 26, something like that in terms of like consolidated lists and everything. But then he just keeps showing out and keeps improving. Like he's finding new elements to his game. He's a fantastic shooter too. He's not as good as Eiserman, obviously, but he's got great compete. It's not like he is his father, but like, you know, you see a lot of just good hockey from him. Mm-hmm. Good competitive edge to him, can play physical. He is a little small, like he doesn't fill out really well on the ice yet.
Yeah, he's the lightest guy listed here.
Yeah, he's light. So it's hard to see him being a power forward at his size, but he plays a power forward-y game, but does have a lot of playmaking talent and a lot of shooting talent. He reminds me of Timo Meier, but... Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, Timo is a little bit better of a power forward just because his size and all that. Size. But
yeah. I guess, though, people will look at his dad and be like, well, you know, it's yeah. 20 more pounds shouldn't be, 30 more pounds shouldn't be hard.
And obviously, like, it could happen. And he's not, he's not he's not getting pushed around or anything at his size. But you do think that he needs a little bit more time for sure. But he's a good shooter, good playmaker. He's risen a lot for me. He feels like he will one day fit into a middle six NHL role, I think.
It's hard to see this, like the Eisman types, it's hard to see the Sharks taking a chance on that high, even with the 11th pick, because it just doesn't sound like a Mike Greer pick to me, but like a Ginla, if they don't go defenseman, a well-rounded guy like that. Sounds interesting. So
kind of a complimentary scorer, but mm-hmm. You know, there's still a lot of development, I think, with his game, so you never really know. But I like him a lot. And he kind of ends that tier because he's improved so much that I kind of had to throw him into that tier. Andrew Bascha, Mikael Brendzig Nygaard, Tarek Parasek.
I don't want to start to draft that guy
it's really funny.
I had enough learning how to spell Mukhamadulin and say Mukhamadulin, all right? So.
Yeah, it's really funny because on the back of his jersey, when you see it, it's like this long, and they have to shrink the font on his last name because it's a Brandeseg Nygaard. It's very funny and a lot of different. Sometimes they just put Brandeseg or just Nygaard. But and there's a lot of guys in this tier that aren't listed that have had injuries or other reasons that have kept them like out of the. I've kind of pushed them down lists, and mine included. Like Kivaharju has been injured. Adam Juracek has been injured. Both of those are great defenders that honestly a team might see in that like third tier for me.
Sure.
They're currently at like 18, 19 for me.
You said that this fourth tier here went down, like maybe might go down into the 20s for you, like 14 through.
Yeah, I think this is when the draft really opens up. It goes to 28th. 28 or so.
For you, maybe.
Yeah, the next names are Connolly, Kivaharju, Juracek, Greentree, Chet Luchenko. I love Chet Luchenko, but we'll talk about him at another time. He's not in the top 16, but I think he's a very interesting forward. Ryder Ritchie, Chernyshov. So there's a good amount of names here that all fit in this good, have projectable skills, but I think that they're not elite enough at anything to really push them higher.
Mm-hmm.
I do love Andrew Bascha. He's also risen. He plays with Caden Lindstrom. When Caden Lindstrom's been out, a lot of the offense is running through. Obviously, they also have Gavin McKenna, who's a fantastic 16-year-old prospect. But Andrew Bascha does a lot for his line. He's a great power play player, excellent playmaker, another smaller skilled forward that isn't as skilled as somebody like Demidov or Katten, but fits that kind of mold. Brendzig Nygaard does so much well. He plays in the Allsvenskan, but he's more of a, I feel like he's a third line forward in the NHL, mm-hmm. but like probably going to be a good one. It's physical, great shot, doesn't have the best handling ability, isn't the most creative, but he just does a lot well defensively and offensively. Very well-rounded player.
All-around Swede sounds like a Sharks pick.
All-around Swede. Yeah, I just hope it's not at 11. I think
MBN. Yeah. That's what I'm going to call him.
MBN. He's an all-around Swede. I mean, he's actually Norwegian, but he's placed in the Swedish league. He does a lot well. And Tarek Parasek is kind of a sum of all parts player. Like, he doesn't have a standout skill other than he's got great puck awareness and knows how to be in the right spot at the right time. But he does a lot of things well. There was a time when he was like, in the beginning of the WHL season, was like leading all draft eligibles in scoring. And he was doing like, and nobody knew about this kid because he's got like an interesting way he's made it to the WHL. I think he was undrafted, or I have to remember or look it up, but he just is kind of a comes out of nowhere pick that nobody really saw. When I watched him, he's good. It's just, he doesn't stand out in any one way. He just kind of knows where to be on the ice to finish plays and connect plays. So honestly, like, Gabe Perreault is a good example of a guy that has so much puck awareness and such like a feel for the game that he can just be on the ice and make a line better. Parasek's kind of like that, but obviously Gabe Perreault is a better player than Parasek in my mind. But and Gabe Perreault is a little bit more standout playmaking ability than Parasek does. But I think he's a good 16 for right now, because at some point the draft really becomes more open, and then there's guys that have a lot of projectable qualities, but nothing stand out. So he rounded out the tier for me. So we rounded out this top 16.
Okay, well, I have two questions to end for you. Question is, let's say the Sharks have number one in 11. So what's your perfect draft then? Celebrini and who?
I think Celebrini and a defenseman. So okay. I think it's Yakimchuk would be okay, but I would say any of the defensemen above. Like, even Siliaev. If he isn't the highest ceiling, there is still a chance that he makes a top four impact.
He skates and he's big.
He's skatesy big. He plays good defensively. So anybody but Yakimchuk as a defender. I would say Levshinov somehow if he got to 11, but I don't think he will. So Somebody like Parikar or Dickinson, Booyam. So something like that would be my dream draft.
And then second question is the non-Celebrini class. Let's say you get the number two or three or whatever.
That's tough.
And you also get the Pens pick. So, okay. So do you go Leshunov and a forward? Or what do you think? What's sort of your perfect draft there?
Oof. That's really
rough. Traded for the first pick.
You traded for the first pick. You know, I think you go, like, as much as I like Demidov and Katten, I think the Sharks need something different. So I don't think I would pick Demidov or Katten. I think I would pick either Lidstrom or Levshinov in that pick. I think if you could find a way to trade down from two to, like, five and take Lidstrom or Levshinov and then get something else with it, that'd be great. Or Demidov or Katten fall to like four or five, you trade to them, then I think you got good value there. It's just this tier is really tough because you want to take the swing and pick Demidov or Katten just because their ceilings are, I think, a first line player. But you also have the safer options in Lidstrom and Levshinov, I think.
Okay.
So I would say you take one of Lidstrom and Levshinov and then you take a another interesting swing. Like Parikh or Booyam. And even if you go two defenders, like, you just stack up on D because the Sharks don't have a lot of D.
Yeah, they don't. They're not too deep in that right now, for sure.
Yeah, so you never know. It can't hurt you to spend one draft trying to get elite defensive talent. Like, if you don't have the center that is there, that's going to be your number one center.
I have one very last closing question here. There are no goalies in your top 32. Is the Sharks Definitely need to draft a goalie in his draft.
Yeah, I think my first goalie, where is my first goalie? I think he's like 40 or so.
Okay, well, second round, New Jersey pick, here he comes.
So, I mean, it's not like there are more than I think last year. Yeah. But it's not a slam dunk either. So, and okay. I do like Ryerson Leanders is my first goalie. Mm-hmm. He's been, I think the... Let's see where he's at. He's consolidated at 58. He's 39 by Elite Prospects. So yeah, around that area. But I really like Ryerson Leanders. He's not the biggest goalie, but plays well. Good positionally. Has a lot of qualities that he's like 6'1", 6'2", that I think you take a swing on. So, but I would put him in the second round with the New Jersey pick or the Sharks okay. pick or whatever. Maybe not him specifically, but yeah. Yeah, it's one day we'll get that elite goaltender, I think.
One day.
I don't know when that's going to be.
But all right, well, fantastic list here, Keegan. Keegan's going to come out with a top 32 at some point too soon. Yep. So we'll talk about that when he comes out with that. But anyway, yeah, great list. And let's hope for Celebrini plus in this draft. So.
Yeah, Celebrini and one of the defenders. And then we're in the...
We're set,
man. All right. I think that's all we got for this week.
Yes, I think that's all. A little shorter episode this week. I got to get down for practice, guys. So anyway, see you guys next week.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.